Well, as we as I said, today is the first Sunday of Advent, and the beginning of one of the craziest, busiest times of year as we journey to Christmas. Matt and I talked about this last Monday and a little bit on Sunday, how Thanksgiving, if we don't just rush through it, you know, many of us are already thinking of Christmas before we even get to Thanksgiving. But once Thanksgiving is over, there's that mad rush to get everything in, and the season just seems like it just zips by before we know it. But really what we do, and one of the reasons that we always pause, not only this time of year in Advent, but also as we look ahead to Lent here in just a few months, one of the things that we really look to do is to slow down and pause and reflect and wait. During this time, we look at, as I've said many times, this is a backward looking and forward looking kind of holiday and season that we are in. We look back with the people of God as they waited and anticipated and looked for the fulfillment of the promise of the Messiah and God's deliverance of His people. While we also look forward to the time where the Messiah, when Jesus will come a second time and fulfill all of those things that have been promised, when His kingdom will come in its fullness. But it's every year during this time, during these 4 weeks, that we pause and we reflect on kind of these traditional themes, these four themes of hope, peace, joy, and love. And today we focus in on the fact that we are a people of hope, and that our hope is not based on our circumstances, but it's based on the God of whom Isaiah says, "See, this is our God. We have waited for Him so that He might save us. This is the Lord for whom we have waited. Let us be glad and rejoice in His salvation." And so we light this first candle today of hope. As a reminder that even in the darkness, God is at work, and one day the darkness will be no more. And I know I'm thankful for that. I'm sure that you are too. But until then, we wait. We live in this kind of in-between time of promise and fulfillment, of hope and realization. And to follow Jesus means to live in that in-between, the space where our faith has to hold on because our physical sight has not been able to see it yet. We haven't seen the fulfillment of that. And really what Advent does is it gives us the permission to be honest about the things we feel in this tension, in this in-between time. We don't pretend that the world doesn't feel dark. I think a couple of years ago, I kind of talked about this theme of this time of year. The days get shorter. It's darker, longer in the mornings and earlier in the afternoon. And so this is a time really where we feel kind of the shadows creep in. And that's really representative of the time that we live in, of our world. Wars are raging. Hearts are still break. Bad things happen. Despair feels like it creeps in. And if we're not careful, this waiting that we experience and that we go through can turn into just resignation and hopelessness, as if we start to believe that this is just the way that things are always going to be. But again, this time of year, for these 4 weeks, we pause to remind ourselves, especially as we begin this journey, that we are a people of hope. And we're not the only ones. We're not the first ones to live in this tension. Our ancestors in the faith knew this tension well, especially in those days leading up to the coming of Jesus's arrival. The verses that we're going to be looking at this morning from Luke chapter 2 bear this out. And these are verses today and next week. We're going to look at the first three verses of this passage and then the next ones next Sunday. These are verses that are typically reserved for Christmas Eve and Christmas, but we're going to look at them today as kind of a lead-in to what we're going to be celebrating. And this is what Luke says in Luke 2, verses 1 through 3. He says, at that time, an order went out from Caesar Augustus for a census to be taken throughout the Roman Empire. This was the first census taken when Quirinius was governor of Syria. Everyone had to return to their own ancestral towns to register for this census. So Luke begins this passage, he begins this chapter with those kind of three very simple words, at this time. And those are not just a casual way to start the story. They're words that really set the historical context for what's going to come next. If you know the story of Israel, this is something that we revisit again this time every year. Israel at this time had been under foreign occupation for six centuries. Their lives were dictated by others. Their worship was restricted. It was regulated. Their national identity was very fragile. It had begun with the Babylonians and the Assyrians, and this time around it was the Roman Empire, who dominated everything in their path, language, culture, religion. And the people of God, the Jews, found themselves living at a time that constantly made them ask, how do we stay faithful to God when Caesar demands our loyalty, when Rome demands our loyalty? And now here comes Caesar, and he declares a census, which on the surface, really, that sounds innocent enough, sounds simple enough, you know, count the people, right? But for Israel, it was another slap in the face, because it was a painful reminder of their powerlessness. It wasn't just about numbers, it was about control and taxation. Count the people so that we know who we need to be collecting taxes from. So that we know who we have under our control. It was a reminder, again, that they were subjects of Rome and not free people of God. And for many of the Jews, many of the people of Israel, this was a humiliating and kind of costly thing that they were required to do. Families were uprooted, livelihoods were interrupted. They had become nothing more than a demographic in Caesar's empire. And to make matters worse, on top of everything else, they hadn't heard from God in 400 years. He had been silent. There were no new prophets. There were no fresh messages, no visible miracles. The temple still continued. All of those, the work of the temple, the sacrifices still continued. But heaven itself was silent. Generations had passed with no sign that God was still speaking or even present among them. That's the world into which Jesus was born. It was a world in which the people of God felt like they were forgotten, that they were dominated by human power, and they were desperate for hope. It was at that time. Now, I think many of us can relate to that because we have all had at that time moments in our lives, right? Moments where the grief seems overwhelming, where it feels like God is not hearing our prayers, where we have these immense times of loss and disappointments, and we ask ourselves, where is God in all this? Has he disappeared? Is he even aware of what's going on? It's in those moments that we're really not all that different from the people of Israel, from the people of God living under Roman rule. But the words of Luke chapter 2 remind us that there is hope in the darkness. Luke says, even at that time, God was already at work. And one of the things about the Christmas story that makes it so beautiful is the irony in it. The Roman census, which was really intended to be an act of imperial power by Rome, actually ended up becoming the tool that God used to bring about redemption. Caesar, in his arrogance, kind of unknowingly and unwittingly became a part of God's plan. What Rome had intended for control and meant for control, God used to bring about salvation, because the very decree that sent people scrambling back home to their ancestral towns is the very same decree that sent Mary and Joseph to Bethlehem, which was the very place that centuries before Micah had foretold would be the birthplace of the Messiah. When he said, "But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come one for me, one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times. The fact of the matter is, this census was not outside of God's plan. It was woven right into it. Now, God didn't cause the oppression. He didn't cause the difficulty that brought this about, but he transformed it for his redemptive purposes. And isn't it just like God to do things like that? But even before this moment, even before the call for the census, even before all of this came up, if you look at the story and the things preceding this, God had already been at work moving the pieces around. 6 months before this, John the Baptist, who was one who had been foretold who would come, this prophet who would come to prepare the way for the Christ, he had been born. He represented the beginning of this new chapter of God's relationship with humanity and with the rest of the world. We had the angel had already visited Joseph and Mary and made their pronouncement about what would happen. It told Mary that she would conceive and give birth to a son, and you were to call him Jesus because he will save the people from their sins. And so even before this happened, even in the silence, the story of redemption was already quietly unfolding in this obscure corner of the world through very unlikely people. So while Caesar was flexing his imperial muscles, God was at work through it all to bring about the salvation of the world. And that's a pattern that we see God working that way is consistent throughout Scripture. Very early on, we see God call a childless nomad to father a great nation. He called a stuttering fugitive to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. And here we see him calling this teenage girl from a nowhere village to be the mother of the Messiah. And this isn't just a history lesson, something that just happened back then. I think it's important to remember that the way we see God work throughout Scripture is a good reminder of how he continues to work and how he tends to continue to work. Because there's a promise for us here today. When the darkness seems overwhelming, God is still working. And that's one of the reasons that the church is so important. For all of our imperfections and for all of the things that we sometimes don't get right, we are meant to be a beacon of that truth. That God has always worked through his faithful people to bring hope and peace to a world that suffers from despair and violence. We are to be a light in a dark and broken world. And one of the things that's encouraging about this that we see over and over again, a good reminder that is that when it feels like God is not doing anything, when it feels like he's silent, when it feels like he's absent, we can put our hope in the fact that God's grace is always reaching out. It reached out to Elizabeth and Zechariah in the pronouncement of the fact that they would bear a son even in their old age. It reached out to Mary and Joseph that they would be the ones to bring the Messiah into the world. Even in the silence, God's grace was working behind the scenes. It's kind of like a quiet, it's quiet and persistent, kind of like a seed that's working its way up through the soil. It might be a long time before you really begin to see the plant, before you begin to see the fruit of it, but it's there. And that's how God's grace, that's how he often works, in subtle and gradual ways, working through his faithful people to bring about his kingdom. And that's what we are to be, is as the people of God, we are to be a foretaste of what that looks like. A foretaste of the world as God intends it to be, a community where the last are first, where the broken are healed, where the lost are found, and where love wins. And these verses in Luke chapter 2, we are reminded of how God is always at work. We are reminded that even at that time, there is still hope, even in the world's darkest days. There's an old Christmas song that if you caught the playlist that's on Facebook that I shared there on Spotify, that has actually become one of my favorites over the last few years, a song called I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day. And it is really, it's a song that really speaks powerfully to this hope in darkness. It's based on a poem that was written by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow during one of the darkest seasons in our country, as well as his life. It was during the days of the Civil War. He wrote it as he was going through his own kind of personal grief. His wife, Frances, had tragically lost her life in a fire in which he suffered some severe burns trying to save her life. A couple of years later, his son Charles ran away underage to join the Union Army, and he was severely wounded in battle. And so the words of this song kind of take on a different meaning when you understand the season that Longfellow was going through when he penned this poem. And it begins joyful. It begins with this joy of hearing Christmas bells. There's this familiar, comforting sound of church bells ringing out this message of hope, the angel's message that they gave, peace on earth and goodwill toward men. And for a moment, Longfellow finds himself kind of captured by the hope of Christmas and what it all means. But then he hears another sound. In the distance, he hears cannons. And so he hears the sound of war, the sound of conflict that is shattering the peace that he's experiencing, and it throws him into despair. And he starts to believe that hatred has silenced the Christmas message, and he writes, "And in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men." That is the cry of someone who understands brokenness, someone who's experienced personal tragedy. He understands the horror of war, and he has concluded that Christmas is just wishful thinking. And if he were to stop there, he would have been left in despair. But he hears another sound. He hears the bells ring out again, louder and clearer. And this time, through this defiant message of hope, cuts through all of the cannon fire. And he writes these words, "Then pealed the bells more loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep. The wrong shall fail, the right prevail. With peace on earth, goodwill to men." He's not denying the reality of suffering. He's not pretending that the war isn't happening or that his losses aren't real. Instead, he is choosing to believe and reaffirming a deeper truth that God is not absent in the midst of this pain. He's not indifferent to it. He's not indifferent to our suffering or disconnected from our suffering. And ultimately, peace on earth and goodwill toward men will prevail. The wrong shall fail, the right prevail. And the bells become this metaphor for this persistent hope that cuts through all the noise, that refuses to be silenced by brokenness and despair. The bells represent the truth that our hope is not based on the absence of suffering, but on the presence of God actively working through all of that to redeem creation. It's a hope that looks honestly at the world's brokenness and still believes that God's love is stronger than hate, God's light is stronger than darkness, and God's life is stronger than death. This is Christmas hope. This is the hope that we hold on to. It's not wishful thinking. It's choosing to believe that God is still at work. He's still bringing about his kingdom. He's still redeeming. He's still restoring. He's still healing. It's hope that knows that the story isn't over and that the final chapter hasn't been written. So what does it mean for us to live like people of hope in our own dark times? Because let's face it, we know we live in some dark times. We live in some times that are full of despair. You open the paper if you read the paper, or you open your phone and it's nothing. It just seems to be nothing but bad news, and that's just on top of all of the personal struggles that we have. Well, it means that we refuse to let despair have the final word. It means that we choose to look for and see God's hand at work, even in the midst of circumstances that often seem hopeless. And over and above all of that, it means that we commit ourselves to being a part of the answer, the solution, and not the problem. We commit ourselves to partnering with God, to being a part of his work of redemption and restoration in the world. And so as we talk about hope this Advent season, especially as we begin this journey, let's remember that hope is not just a warm feeling that we have. It's a choice that we make every day. It's a way that we choose to live. It's a way that we choose to practice our lives. It's a choice to participate in God's ongoing work of bringing light into a dark world. So here's three simple steps, three next right steps that we can put into practice, that we can live out this hope this week. The first thing is to look for God in the quiet. Now, this is a good practice to do all year round, and a good, especially this time of year where it's so busy and crazy and noisy, and it's going to set you up well for something that we're going to be looking at and doing in the coming year after the first of the year. But this world, it's loud. The news is, as I said, it's filled with stories of chaos and despair, and we really need to be intentional about listening closely, even in the midst of the noise, to hear hope and to hear the voice of God. Yeah, and so I want to encourage you to make a habit, especially this week, of intentionally looking for the quiet, subtle ways that God is at work. Sometimes it's hard to escape the noise because we find ourselves just kind of trapped in it. There's other times where we need to make intentional choices to just shut off the noise. But regardless of where we find ourselves, make it an intentional practice to listen and look for those quiet ways that God is at work. And then when you find them, when you see them, just pause and thank Him for it. It's not about ignoring the brokenness or pretending that things are not or difficult, but it's about training our eyes and our hearts to see the light and the hope that is always present. So that's the first thing. Look for God in the quiet. The second thing, speak hope. When you find hope, when you see it, speak it. Our words have power. And so this week, find one opportunity to speak a word of hope into a situation that you know is one of despair, of difficulty. Maybe it's in your own life. Maybe it's in the life of somebody that you know. It might be a simple word. You've got a coworker who's just dealing with some difficult things. Speak a word of hope. Maybe it's a friend who's grieving. I know we've had some in our church family who've experienced loss recently. This is the time to speak hope into their lives. Remember the words of that hymn, "The bells pealed more loud and deep." Our words can be the bells that cut through the noise, that cut through the despair, to remind people that the wrong will fail and the right will prevail as we speak words of peace on earth and goodwill to men. Lastly, humbly serve someone. As we talked about in this message, some of God's greatest work happens in quiet and subtle and a lot of times humble and overlooked ways. And I believe that some of the greatest things that we do for God happen in the same way. So this week, just look for a small practical way to be a part of God's work by serving someone. You don't need to change the world. Maybe you just need to show up. Maybe it's you drop off a meal for somebody. You might volunteer. We've still got an hour to ring a bell for the Salvation Army. I know they're always looking for volunteers and things to help out. This time of year, there's no shortage of opportunities to help out in some area. On a day like today, maybe it's going out and shoveling your neighbor's driveway. It's these kind of small, faithful acts that somebody might ever notice, but God does. It's through these things that we become living testaments that God is still at work. We become this foretaste of this world that is coming, that God as God intends it to be. Again, we're kind of pointing backward to the good news of how God originally intended things, and we're pointing forward to the fact that one day that's going to be like that again, and God is going to restore all things. In the meantime, as we live in this tension, we become kind of reflections of what that looks like, and so hope can be displayed and communicated through those simple actions. So I want to encourage us that as we start this Advent journey, as we start this Advent season, as we talk about hope, let's not just wait. Let's wait with hope. And as we wait with hope, let it not just be a feeling that makes us feel all warm and fuzzy. Let's put action behind that hope. Let's listen for the bells as they ring out through the noise and even in the darkest of times, as they proclaim that God is not dead and he doesn't sleep. Let's commit ourselves to being people who really believe that the wrong will fail and the right will prevail. And that because of that, we can have hope even in these dark times. This is our hope. This is our calling. Amen. Would you pray with me?